Hello, and welcome to the Full Circle Healing Podcast, where we merge modern cutting-edge science with traditional healing wisdom and everything in between to help you come full circle back to your original natural state of health and well-being. I'm your host, Michael, and over the last 15 years, I've helped hundreds of thousands of people find the information, practices, tools, resources, and experts they needed to find their way back to optimal health. Our guest in this episode is Dr. Navaz Habib, the functional health world's leading expert on all things vagus nerve, and you're about to learn why that's so important. Dr. Habib is the best-selling author of Activate Your Vagus Nerve and the newly released Upgrade Your Vagus Nerve, and the host of the Health Upgrade podcast. After graduating as class valedictorian from Canadian Memorial Chiropractic College in 2010, Dr. Habib went on to practice traditional chiropractic for years until he realized the power of functional medicine to transform his own health. Currently, Dr. Habib is the founder of Health Upgraded, an online functional health consulting clinic supporting optimal health by elevating the awareness and function of the vagus nerve. In this episode, we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects, which is the vagus nerve and our body's felt sense of safety and the importance of this in the healing process. You'll learn how the vagus nerve acts as the body's communication highway, controlling digestion, inflammation, respiration, heart rate, and a lot more. You'll learn why our stress response isn't inherently bad and how to tell when your nervous system might be imbalanced. You'll learn about the amazing roles of the immune system that you've likely never heard of before, because I hadn't, and I've talked about a lot of this stuff with a lot of people, and controlled how the vagus nerve controls these largely unknown roles of the immune system when it comes to rebuilding and restoring function within your organs and tissues, and why we cannot heal until we get our body into a state of safety, and several ways to do this, including some new incredible health tech. So, this and a ton more about the common missing link of recovery, both from chronic disease and stubborn GI problems, but also from anxiety, depression, insomnia, and many other conditions. If you're interested to start practicing what you learn about in this episode right away, head over to rebelhealth.co/breathing and grab my Breathing for Nervous System Regulation ebook. Some of the practices described in the episode, we have tutorials for in the ebook. And you're also going to learn about an amazing new piece of health tech called Truvaga, which can improve your vagal tone and offer immediate health and wellness benefits. And Dr. Habib was one of the practitioners who worked to create it. So you'll find that at rebelhealth.co/Truvaga, T-R-U-V-A-G-A. That's rebelhealth.co/Truvaga. It's a really cool piece of technology. I'm definitely going to grab one the next time I'm back in North America in about 6 weeks, and I'm looking forward to having it here myself. So now let's dive in. Hey, Dr. Habib, welcome to the podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, Michael.
Yeah, it's been a long time, should have happened. We've kind of known each other for a long time and had mutual friends and acquaintances, and we're finally getting to sit down and talk about something that we were talking before we came on air that I also find really fascinating, and it has a lot of importance in lots of different areas of, we'll just call, like, the healing world. And so I guess we'll just jump right in. As people in our audience here at Rebel Health tend to fall into the chronic disease or, you know, healing from complex illness or gut problems or just autoimmune, the vagus nerve is probably something that they've heard about, or they've heard somebody mention, or they're like a little familiar with it, or one time they read an article somewhere and it kind of stuck. And I feel like that's where it was at 6 or 7 years ago in functional medicine, but it's still kind of there. Like, I don't think it's kicked into the, I'll call, mainstream of functional medicine as much as it should. So before we get into, like, your story and why you got so into it, let's just set up, like, what is the vagus nerve? And then let's just start there and we'll build from there.
Totally. The vagus nerve, as we've been taught in whatever medical nutrition school that you've kind of gone to, in terms of the basics, it's the 10th cranial nerve. And we say the vagus nerve. In reality, there's two of them. We've got one on each side, right side and left side. And they're not symmetrical. There are some differences in terms of where they go. But it is a cranial nerve. but it's the only cranial nerve that leaves the head cavity. We've got 12 pairs of cranial nerves, and only the 10th one, the vagus, leaves the head cavity and does something else. And that's what's really unique about this, is it connects to so many different organs and regulates so many important functions within the body. It just is so unique to any other structure that I've found within the body. And so really, and I know we're going to get to my story later, but that's what drew me to it, was the explanation that we were given in school is that it controls the parasympathetic nervous system. Now, we'll head one level back up. We've got kind of our nervous system. We all know the brain, the spinal cord. We've got nerves that go from these structures to different organs, different tissues, and sending information to and from the brain. The vagus nerve is unique to this, and the autonomic nervous system is kind of the second piece. So we've got the central nervous system, brain and spinal cord. We've got the peripheral nervous system, which is the nerves. And then we've got the autonomic nervous system, which controls all of the automatic processes that happen within our body without our conscious control. So the beating of our heart and our heart rate, our breath rate, our digestion, our detoxification function, the ability for us to have peristaltic motion, our kidney filtration, our ability to, turn on and off the immune system. All of these things happen without conscious control. And so this is what the autonomic nervous system does. And the autonomic nervous system is broken down into two sides. We've got the sympathetic, which is known as kind of the fight or flight situation, or the fight or flight side. And this is good for keeping us alive and allowing us to handle threats to our survival very effectively. It's a really important piece to this puzzle. If we don't have that, we're gone. And this is an evolutionarily kind of guided and adapted thing that we've got as humans. On the opposite side of this, we've got the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the rest, digest, and I've added recover to this piece because it's not just resting and digesting. It actually initiates some really important functions within our body with regards to recovery. And that's where the vagus nerve runs the majority of its information, is on that parasympathetic nervous system. So this really stuck out to me. Over the last 20 years, we've learned that it has so much more to do with actually signaling and telling the brain about inflammation that's happening in different areas of the body and sending important signals to the immune system to dictate whether it should fight against whatever that threat is, or if it should enter a state where it can heal and relax. And we'll get into kind of the science behind it a little bit more, but really it's this structure that is necessary for our function, and it's unique to any other structure in the body. There's nothing else like the vagus nerve, and that's really why my attention was drawn to it.
Thanks for laying that all out for us. And I think that it's such a fascinating part of our anatomy. And I didn't know it was the only cranial nerve that leaves the head. I did know everything like else about where it goes and what it does. The name of it comes from the Latin, which means wandering. And so if you look at the picture of the vagus nerve, or like the sketches, it starts and goes down and goes to all these different areas. And I also like that you mentioned that the sympathetic nervous system, or the fight and flight response, isn't bad, that it's something that we need. I think that so many people, because of the way our lives are and that stress is, and the way stress causes disease, and that the system is designed to like have a stress, respond to the stress, recover from the stress, go on with your life. We're very good at not doing that. And so, we get burned out, or we get stuck in that, or what, like our systems get all out of whack, and the sympathetic system gets vilified, because if it's chronically activated all the time, there's a lot of problems that come on. But I think that anybody who has dealt with like adrenal insufficiency or chronic fatigue or any of these conditions that involve like full-blown exhaustion that someone who's never had it wouldn't understand, would love to have a little bit of sympathetic activation in their body to be able to like go for a walk, play with the grandkids, go to the store. Like, people don't realize anytime they do anything that involves activation, they need this sympathetic. So it's about balance. So I like when it gets pointed out that it's not inherently bad. You know, it just,
I agree. It's been given a bad rap, but in reality, we need both, right? And the analogy that I'll provide here really quickly is we've got in a car, we've got an accelerator and a brake, right? We need to have a car without an accelerator is useless, right? It's not going to go anywhere. It's a hunk of junk sitting in the garage. We need to ensure that that system, that car can move. So we need to be able to push the accelerator. And that's really what the sympathetic nervous system does. The parasympathetic nervous system, the vagus nerve, is the brakes in that analogy. And we need to have both functioning. So if we have sympathetics functioning and parasympathetics functioning, then the accelerator and brake can work synergistically with one another. But a car with no brakes is dangerous. And that's where we get into sympathetic overdrive and chronic sympathetic activation. And a car with no accelerator is a piece of junk. So we need to have both. And where the problem comes in is when we are unable to regulate or be able to shift between these two. So essentially having good effective sides to both of these, both the accelerator and the brake, is necessary for our optimal functioning.
Yeah. And I think that gets missed a lot. I think it's just this one's good and this one's bad, and we need more of this one and less of that one, whichever side. And I think that nothing in our health or wellness is black and white and good and bad like that. So it's, we just went over, you know, the vagus nerve innervates all these organs, has to do with the breathing and the heart rate. And you mentioned the peristaltic activity, the gut, and the people with chronic digestive issues and their gut doesn't move, things like SIBO, for example, when there's impaired motility. And the vagus nerve plays a huge role here, or they're not absorbing food, or et cetera, et cetera. Even constipation or, you know, chronic diarrhea, any basically any, even low stomach acid production. I would guess almost any, I just completed curating Curon's microbiome and gut course, so I'm pretty well versed at the moment, but it ties into almost anything with digestion.
100%.
And so this, you know, I piqued your interest. And so you were like, hey, why isn't anybody talking about this? Or just kind of went down the rabbit hole. So how did it go for you as a practitioner that you decided to focus, this is where I'm going to really focus my attention? And you've written two books on the topic now, and are, and at least in my world, you're kind of known as the guy, the vagus nerve guy within the functional medicine world at this point. And so how did that come about?
It came about initially, my initial kind of interest in it came about when I was an anatomy nerd in high school, when I first saw that it was unique. And I just didn't feel like the explanation of this runs the parasympathetic nervous system was enough for me. I didn't love that. And so it was through my journey through kind of functional medicine training where I started to learn about the common pathway towards all disease. And this common pathway to chronic illness tended to be uncontrolled inflammation. And we often vilify inflammation. Inflammation is a good thing in an acute short-term situation because what it's doing is it's activating that sympathetic fight or flight type of activation within the immune system. But what we're lacking is control. We're lacking the ability to send a signal to the immune system to control the inflammatory process. Inflammation is not a disease or a diagnosis. And I think that's a big misnomer. Mm-hmm. Inflammation is a necessary process within the body. But that process needs regulation. It needs control. And that's where the vagus nerve comes in. And so it was discovered early on in kind of this century that the vagus nerve is the pathway by which we send that particular signal to regulate inflammatory control, to regulate the immune system. This entire pathway actually has a name called the cholinergic anti-inflammatory pathway. And so This pathway really started to kind of show up in a pattern that I started to see in autoimmune conditions and digestive disorders and brain inflammatory conditions and all of these challenges that people were dealing with. The common pathway was chronic inflammation. So I thought, well, what could be missing in regulating that inflammation? And it turns out that vagus nerve function plays a critical role in ensuring that we can send the signals to those immune cells to regulate the inflammatory process, to bring it downwards, to say, you don't need to be fighting right now because a threat to your survival is gone. Now we can shift to a mode where we can actually rest, digest, and recover. And this is important to understand. Our bodies cannot heal when we're stuck in fight or flight. Right? Just the same way as your car needs to go to the mechanic, you can't have your foot on the accelerator when the mechanic's trying to fix the car. the car needs to be stopped. We need to push the brakes for the mechanic to be able to hoist the car up or open the hood or whatever they have to do. We have to stop the car. And so many people are constantly in this stressed fight or flight type of zone in a chronic timeline that's then initiating or sending signals to shut down vagus nerve function or to limit how much the vagus nerve is able to send its signals. And what that does is it turns on and ensures that that inflammatory process remains long-term. That's where the problems lie. So that's really where my introduction to this situation was, in a very functional, physiological pattern. Then I was introduced to the idea of the polyvagal theory, and it just all came together. And I think we can get into kind of talking about the psychological aspect in combination with the physiological aspect, because the two truly go hand in hand. And this is that mind-body, brain-body connection that really needs to be explored more.
Well, thanks for sharing that. I was not an anatomy nerd in high school, so it took me a lot longer to figure that one out. This chronic inflammation, as a lot of people in our audience know, is like a thing that's present in a lot of disease processes and a lot of chronic disease, autoimmunity, gut issues. And so it's the importance of being able to turn that off. And you mentioned you can't heal when the body's in a, you know, activated sympathetic state. And so many people just exist in a activated sympathetic state. And we're not trying to blame anybody. We've kind of set things up that way. Like our culture, our society, our system, whatever you want to call the overlapping aspects of it, put us in that state. We're not really taught ways to, we're not taught this. And so we don't even acknowledge it. We're not aware of it or conscious about it, because I do a lot of work now with it around like regulating emotions and anxiety and depression and like mental emotional side of things. And to help people in that aspect, your first step is always even to make them aware of the situation. And so many people aren't even like, I'm not stressed. And then I'll talk to them for like an hour and a half about like their work or their life or their relationship or their day or whatever. And I'm not stressed. And it's like their job is stressful. Their relationship is stressful. They have like loads of unresolved childhood trauma. They have this, they have this. The world and the state of things is chaos. Like, we're not designed to absorb everything that's happening at the world all at the same time on the phone that shouldn't exist being held in our face telling, you know, like, and then so people, I don't think, realize how overstimulated, right, they get. And
totally,
whether it's, you know, I've interviewed some of the leading like practitioners who work with the most complex chronic, like overlapping Lyme disease, mold toxicity, mast cell activation syndrome, all like balled into with throw some heavy metals in there and some other, and those really complex, really sick, really difficult patients and clients. And they'll all say the same thing, that if you want to simplify this, when people say like, how do you get better? It's like, you can throw all these complex protocols and testing at people that you want, but if their body is not feeling safe, if the body is not getting a message that it's safe, if it's not in a state of parasympathetic or healing or recovery, you're going to constantly be fighting like an uphill, impossible slug. And that's where those, well, I got a little better, but then I regressed, or I was doing a little better, and then I had one stressful thing happen, and then like everything snowballed out of control, right? Like, so
totally.
I think that this message of a body can't heal in that state, and then if you flip that the body will only heal, like it moves towards healing on its own. In the other side of that equation, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. I love that you brought up safety, and I want to come back to that in a second. But you're exactly right. We've always kind of wondered, what was the vagus nerve sending signals to, right? Because it literally, the name you mentioned means wanderer, but it came from the root word vague, meaning we didn't truly understand what it connected to, because we looked at an organ and saw, okay, it's the heart. Okay, it's the stomach. And it's sending signals to all these different organs, and it's got one neurotransmitter that it's using, only acetylcholine. What is it actually connecting to? Where are the signals truly going? And you have to look at who it's connecting to. And the cells that it's connecting to, which now we've been able to see through histology, through physiological study and research, is that it's connecting to the immune cells that are present in every single organ. So here's a stat for you. Between 5 and 15% of every organ in your body is composed of immune cells. What that means is we didn't realize that we have immune cells present in every organ, and we've been putting the immune system in this silo of it's just there to defend us. When in reality, when we're developing as a fetus, the first cell that develops is the macrophage. It's the first cell differentiation that occurs. That macrophage then goes out to all of the areas to help develop and actually build different organs. And they remain in those organs for the entirety of your life. The macrophages are really key to this entire building and repair and function process. And so they remain there, obviously in certain amounts, to make sure that those organs function effectively. And how do they get their signals? Primarily through the vagus nerve. So the vagus nerve is actually connecting to the immune cells that are present in every organ of the body, not just in the gut, not just in the heart. Immune cells are everywhere. Now, what about the cells, the immune cells that are present in organs that don't have direct vagus nerve signaling? That's the pathway that was developed or discovered early this century by Kevin Tracy at the Feinstein Institute, where they found the cholinergic anti-inflammatory pathway. So vagus nerve relays its information through the spleen to send that acetylcholine signal to the skin and to the bones and to the organs and tissues that don't have direct vagus nerve inputs. But the vagus nerve is crucial to ensure that that works. So what we're actually signaling to is the immune cells. And the immune cells are getting a signal. And if they're not getting a signal effectively from the vagus nerve, we're pushing the accelerator. We're telling the immune system, we're priming it to be in a sympathetic state more readily. And that's where the problem occurs, because we're primed to be in fight or flight. We're primed to be in a fight mode. And so the immune system will fight, and it'll break down tissue that it doesn't realize is actually not the problem, the source of the problem. So what we need to do is start to learn and start to push to turn on the vagus nerve again to make sure that those signals can get to those immune cells and downregulate their activity, put them back into a state where those immune cells were initially kind of brought in to make sure that they can turn on that repair process, the fix process. And immune cells do that, but we've siloed it into being a fight thing. So we really need to realize immune cells are capable of both, but they need the right signal to do that.
That's interesting. I've never heard that before. I did not know that. And then that higher percentage of cells in every organ are immune cells. I didn't know that. I've kind of viewed the immune cells as something that's like outside the organs.
Yeah.
Not like actually in the organs. And I've never heard that about macrophages being the first cell differentiation or any of that. And so it's interesting because, yeah, it's like the immune cell finds things and kills things. That's what most people know about it. It's not that it can also give instructions to rebuild or repair or restore. So even the word immune for the immune system is not really accurate or adequate. Like it's
exactly
like it. Yeah. The concept of the word itself should be changed, but I wouldn't know a word that would work better to encompass all of that. But like defend and rebuild kind of situation.
Call it like a regulatory system, really, yeah, more than anything else, because it's regulating the function and ensuring that it can go fight or flight or rest, adjust, recover, right? And it's those cells that actually initiate those processes.
That's really fascinating. And like from an emotional standpoint with polyvagal and this situation, if the vagus nerve is not active and we're not in any sympathetic, or if they go into like over dorsal vagal, like overstimulation of the vagus, which is like the freeze response. Yes. Again, like it's, if a car only has a brake, it's not good. And so then people are shut down and depressed and these kind of things. But I don't know where I was going with that. But anyways, let's jump into how does it get messed up? Like, why is this a problem? Like, I know from like a mental emotional trauma standpoint, I know how it gets messed up. So maybe that's how it gets messed up on the functional medicine physiological side as well. But 100%. Like, what happens that causes people to, I'll use terminology which we could explain, but it's like low vagal tone, like where the vagus nerve isn't very effective or efficient or functioning. The signals are not getting to these cells. It's not getting the message. The body's not getting the message that it's safe. Like, why does that happen, or how does that happen? Do we know?
Yeah, we alluded to that earlier, and I think this is a perfect point to bring it back to. You mentioned from a psychological standpoint, when we lack feelings of safety, then we put our bodies into or prime us towards a sympathetic or a dorsal vagal state, right? We're out of this feeling of safety where repair and recovery can occur. But now we need to extend that definition out, because it's not just on the psychology side that we can feel unsafe. What if we feel physically unsafe in a car because we had a car accident, or in a certain environment because we were told that somebody was a victim of a crime in an alley nearby, or in the house that we're growing up in because somebody was unfortunately the victim of a childhood trauma, right? Or in the case of something like PTSD, they had physical safety challenges because if they were involved in a war, for example, or involved in a conflict, that triggered or it pushed them towards this sympathetic state far more readily. They've lost that feeling of safety. So psychological safety is one aspect. What about physical safety? What about biochemical safety? What's biochemical safety? Are we being threatened by tons of bacteria, parasites, viruses, yeast, worms from our gut microbiome? Are we being threatened by biochemical toxins that are being sprayed on all of our foods or being present on our clothing or being put all around us? Biochemical safety is a lack of nutrients that are making their way effectively into the cell, right? We're not able to get the nutrients in. So do we feel biochemically safe? Safety, again, it comes back to. And then emotional safety, day-to-day emotional safety, right? Do I feel safe with my kids? Do I feel safe with my spouse? Do I feel safe in my home? These are all aspects of safety that need to be looked at. Anytime we're pushed out of this feeling of safety because we've been threatened with a Lyme disease, like a tick bite, right? That's a biochemical trigger to push us out of biochemical safety, and our immune system reacts to that. And that's necessary. But if this happens chronically and it builds up and it compounds over time, then that bucket of what we're capable of handling begins to overflow. And that's really what drives vagal tone down, because the vagus nerve, just like the brakes in a car, has a certain level or a certain amount that it can push. But if you have to push the brakes consistently all the time because something is actively or unconsciously pushing on the accelerator, the brakes burn out. The brakes will wear down, brake pads will wear down, brake fluid will leak, right? Your ability to, I'm sure most people have driven a car and the brakes are like, you have to push hard to get the car to stop. That's low vagal tone, because we're not able to send those effective signals to slow it down. So sympathetic overdrive is not simply based on psychological lack of safety, but physical, emotional, and biochemical safety triggers as well.
Okay. The overlaps are fascinating. And side story that's sort of relevant to your analogy, have driven a car that lost the power steering and power brakes while I was driving it. So yeah, it changes your perspective on car mechanics a little when that happens. Yeah. It's just terrifying. But you don't realize how much mechanical advantage is usually in your favor, is what I was getting at. And so like losing the tone, that's a good analogy. And so it's this, all these different bombardments, whether it's emotional or psychological or like that kind of trauma, or it's biochemical or toxins, or whether it's, you know, food stuff, or whether, you know, it's even just probably like a sedentary life of never moving and never getting the body moving can do this too.
It's and a physical so, safety issue.
Or overtraining for some people. But yeah, it's... Yep. Anything that's really pulling it out of balance consistently, continually, chronically. So you've written a couple books on the subject, and you educate both doctors, patients on like the importance of this and the physiology and the things we've kind of talked about here, but also on the kind of like what to do, how to, I don't want to use the word hack because I don't like it. And I don't like encouraging. My problem with biohacking is that oftentimes they're trying to answer, like come up with problems, or come up with solutions to problems that don't have to be problems. Yeah. If they just like live their life differently, like people will be like, what do I do to like not be tired if I can only sleep 4 hours a night? And I'll be like, dude, I'm not even going to tell you because I just want you to sleep. Like, so that aside, to what can, is there, are there things we can do that do stimulate the vagus nerve, increase vagal tone, bring this feeling of safety back to the body, even in the world that we're living in and being surrounded by all these things and bombarded with all this stuff? Like, can we interrupt that chaos to work on that?
100% we can. What's really exciting is we're getting back to kind of our roots. We're getting back to this idea of becoming mindful once again. And mindfulness really is this ability to shift your awareness towards what's actually happening in and around you. And I think that is what has been lost through the environment that we live in, through the society, through the technology, through all of these things. As wicked as it is that I'm able to be here in Toronto and speak to you in Italy and have this conversation and share my information in real time, we need to take breaks from this. We need to be able to separate ourselves from this and say, let me step outdoors and feel the grass on my feet. Let me step outdoors and focus my attention back on my breath. Let me separate myself from these threats to my physical, emotional, psychological, biochemical safety and turn these things back on and shift my awareness internally again. So mindfulness really is the key here, because if we become aware of what's happening in our body, then we can catch some of those really important signs that the vagus is not working well. The easiest way to bring your mindfulness towards your vagus nerve or your current functioning is your breath. And I know this is something that you're really adamant about and a huge proponent of. So for me, I have patients just put a hand on their chest and a hand on their belly and take three breaths and see, am I breathing more with my chest or am I breathing more with my diaphragm and my belly? And that's the quickest feedback mechanism, using our sensory from our hands to tell us. You know what? I'm breathing too much with my chest. I need to shift my breath more diaphragmatic and let's get into some belly breaths. And let's slow it down. Am I breathing too fast? What's my breath rate like? I feel like wearable technology can be a really cool tool in situations like this. I got my notification today that I've had my Oura Ring for 6 years, thanks to Sachin, by the way. And
I just got one this month.
Oh, I love it. You're going to love it.
I held off for a long time. I was like, I'll know if I'm this or I'm this or I'm this. I was like one of those, I'm kind of a Luddite. People think because I work online that I love like tech things and I use lots of tech things. I'm actually not, but it is pretty interesting now that I have it to see it.
What's exciting about the technology is if you can utilize it and not let it utilize you, right? Not let it use you. So I think technology is really kind of this tool that a lot of people are now becoming more user-friendly with, they're becoming more capable of utilizing, but saying, oh my goodness, my breath rate is 18 breaths per minute, or oh my goodness, my HRV is at 12, like something's going on, what is happening? But becoming just aware of your breath, I think that's the most simple way to do this. Mm-hmm. Without wearable technology, dead easy to do this. Just check your breath. Is it more a chest-based breath, or is it more a belly-based breath? Are you taking longer inhales or longer exhales? Ideally, turn on the exhales. Fun little side note, when you're inhaling, you're pushing the accelerator and going towards sympathetic state. When you're exhaling, you're pushing the brakes and going towards parasympathetic state, and you're turning on your vagus nerve during that time. Most people are breathing not quite on a one-to-one ratio of inhale to exhale. They're inhaling longer and exhaling shorter. And that tells us that we're spending more time pushing towards sympathetic. So teach yourself to push towards parasympathetic by taking longer exhales. And then the last thing is, are you breathing through your nose or are you breathing through your mouth? We should be nasal, diaphragmatic, longer exhales with our breath. And that should just be happening consistently while we're sitting, while we're working, while we're walking around. And your breath will change when stressors pop up. You'll notice this now. As you start to notice your kids come home and they're screaming, or there's something that's happening outside, somebody cuts you off in traffic, your breath will immediately shift, right? You'll go, oh my goodness, what's happening? And you go to this mouth-based, inhale-focused, short chest breath. And that's the sympathetic reactive change that's occurring. And so that changes the signaling to your heart. That changes the signaling to your gut. If somebody's cutting you off in traffic, I'm not worried about digesting my food at that moment. I'm not worried about detoxifying the toxins that are present in my liver. I got to make sure that I don't get hit by the car that just cut me off, right? So sympathetic. But what if that's happening consistently because your breath pattern is stuck in that sympathetic mode? Then what we're doing is we're not sending the signals through the vagus nerve to turn on the rest, digest, and recover signals that need to be sent to the immune system and to the digestive system and to the heart and to the liver and to the kidneys. Those signals need to be sent effectively. And so the breathing pattern, more than anything else, the breath is truly what it all comes down to. We breathe between 16 and 23,000 times a day. If you can start to shift that, ideally closer to that 16,000 breaths, slow it down. What you'll start to notice is we're making a shift towards that parasympathetic nervous system, towards vagally activated state. And that's what so many people are missing. For me, the breath is what it all comes down to. And then you can add things on top of this. We've heard about the joys of cold plunge or sauna therapy or temperature therapy.
What I'll are take saunas all you day. You won't get me in a cold plunge, no matter how many good things it's going to do for me. I'm a hardliner on it. I hate it more than the benefits are, so it'll be a net negative, but go for it.
That's if you're you one of those Italy, people. Right?
Yeah, I no, thank you. But the face, like you could put cold water on the face and it cold stimulates water on the face. Vagus nerve, right?
I had a patient yesterday show me she got these ice packs that she can put on her shoulders and on her head. And that just helps with that regulation. What it's doing is it's bringing your awareness back into your body. It's really just, it's a shock treatment to shift your awareness back internally. And what you want to do is learn to breathe while that shock or that stressor is currently present. And what that does is the next time a stressor occurs outside, you can quickly pull yourself back towards internal awareness, internal parasympathetic activation, right? So you want to get better at being able to handle stressors. Doesn't matter the type of stress. If you can handle the stressor better, then you can send those signals more effectively to shift your body and go into that healing state more readily. That's the key behind all this.
Yeah, thank you. And people don't realize that stress is a subjective thing.
100%.
Most of like chemical stress and certain ones are not, but like if you're exposed to like a radon or some, I don't know, that's the first toxic thing I could think of, but everyone will respond to that in a negative way. But like things that happen outside, a lot of them and internally in our mind, because we're unique amongst animals that we can stress ourselves out with nothing happening. But, It's a subjective thing. Like it's completely subjective. And so it's your perception of what's happening is going to drive the physiological response to it. And I always use the example for this. I used to skydive. I was a licensed skydiver. I had my own gear. I jumped 100-something times over a few summers. And some people hear that and they start sweating now, like sitting here hearing it, or they get dizzy or they feel nauseous. Like I've sat with people in real life and told them that and watched their body turn white and start to react. And then I have to remind them like, hey, we're at a cafe right now. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
Other people are like, wow, that's so cool. What was it like? How do you do? And they're not stressed at all.
Exactly.
And I would see this on the plane and it shifted for me. Like when I first started doing it, I was terrified. And by the time I wasn't like towards the end of my time doing it, I didn't have one of these then, but I would guess that the difference in my heart rate was significantly different, lower towards the end than it was at the beginning, but it was the same exact thing that I was doing. Totally. Objectively, it was equally as terrifying at the end as it was at the beginning. And I teach now meditation and breathing. And for a while, I thought those were two separate things. They're not.
They're not.
They're the same thing. And the way you just described the breathing is the exact same way teaching meditation. And they're actually, some forms of meditation are literally doing just what you were saying, is to 100%. Return your focus to the breath. And that it's the fastest way we have to shift our psychological state. It's the fastest way we have to shift our physiological state. And it's always there and you can do it all the time. And it's not only the benefit, like you're saying, like do this practice, which with the hand and the belly and the chest is beneficial while you're doing it. Yes. And the more that you ingrain into your physiology that like, this is the way to breathe.
Yes.
It's going to do it more when you're not doing this and in situations where you get cut off in a car. So you practice it more and more and more. your threshold for the thing that can happen externally to pull you out of that goes up.
Yes.
So it takes more. And it's like the breathing, it's the parallels between like learning to breathe and learning to meditate. People are like, I can't meditate. I'm like, cool. Can you breathe?
Just breathe.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, let's do that then.
Just
we'll
do that.
We'll call it breathing.
Yeah. I love that because people totally psych themselves out when you say meditate.
Yeah.
And they're like,
I didn't know that. Meditate. And but, I've run into
you
it
can
now.
Put your attention towards breathing.
Yeah. So I just dropped the lingo.
You're doing the same thing. I love it.
I just drop the lingo. I don't use words like consciousness or awareness or et cetera, et cetera. We just talk about the breathing. And I find that's way more like, that's a Western thing. Like
totally.
our culture is like, we're so wired and fried that like, that's an intimidating concept. All right, great. And then also before we go, I want to bring up, you're involved with, and we didn't even talk about this beforehand. I just know you're involved with the creation of, there's a device called Truvaga, which I learned from Dr. Yes. Elisa's song, which might actually be on the podcast episode with her that will be airing either just before or just after this one. And nice. It's a device that can stimulate the vagus nerve from the outside. You had it handy, so you can hold that up. And it goes here, right?
Right on the neck. So the location of the vagus nerve is really important to note. In the neck, it's beside your carotid artery and jugular vein. So if you find your pulse, you've essentially found your vagus nerve within a couple of millimeters. And what if we could use a very simple, non-invasive electrical signal on that area to turn the nerve on more effectively? And this is a great tool that I've used with dozens of patients, having phenomenal changes in their ability to regulate inflammation in their body, regardless of the condition that they're having or the condition they're experiencing. It's if they're in a chronic inflammatory state and they're having tons of difficulty shifting into that parasympathetic state, this is a catalyst to help make that happen. And it's as simple as 2 minutes daily.
Wow, that's so cool. I shared before we went on air that I had talked with Tatis Karazi, and Dr. Karazi is like a really well-known, for people who don't know, like functional neurology genius. And it was over 5 years ago. I was talking to him because certain products started coming on the market making claims. And I was like, do these things work? And he's like, not really. The ones that work really well are implants, and you don't want to deal with that. That's very invasive. But he said, come back in like 5 years and ask me again. And then I heard about your device from Dr. Song, and I thought, well, those don't work. And then I did some math in my head, and I was like, wait, he said, come back in 5 years. And it's been 6 years. So maybe there's a shot. And then I saw that now there's studies, now that there's research, now that it's pretty proven. And it's the testimonials I'm seeing around these are people with really complex digestive problems finally seeing something shift, because it's bringing the signal back to the gut on like how to do its job. And I would guess that would go for like chronic pain, inflammatory conditions as well. And then I'm really excited to see how this can work for people with, you know, anxiety, insomnia, PTSD type symptoms, to like flip their switch. And then all the things we described a minute ago about the breathing or other practices you can do, it makes it much easier to do those things if you have a little nudge in that direction with something like this to kind of get the ball rolling. Because it's ironically, it's the most difficult to do the things that calm your system down when you're the most stimulated or activated.
Absolutely.
And it's like, you don't use the tools that you have when you need them the most. It's really easy to meditate on like a sunny, breezy 70 degree Fahrenheit, 25 Celsius day.
Yes.
On a hill when everything's going well in your life, not a cloud in the sky and there's birds chirping. It's really hard to do it when you're in the middle of life chaos and really challenging times.
Totally.
And something like this, I think, could really help people get the ball rolling to be able to start doing a lot of other things. And in an acute way, it works. It helps you like quickly. And so it can shift someone's mental, emotional state. It switches their inflammatory state, the digestion. So it's called Truvaga.
Yes.
It's Truvaga, right?
That is correct. Yes.
Yeah. We'll have links. We'll have links down below. You can actually go to rebelhealth.co/Truvaga, Truvaga, and you'll find it there. And it's a really cool device, and I think that it can help tons of people. And your two books, you want to give those a shout and tell people where to go to get started if they want to start implementing some of this stuff?
The most recent one is called Upgrade Your Vagus Nerve. That one came out just early this year, 24. So that's a great guide, and it kind of brings in 5 years of my clinical expertise and 5 years of me working with patients that had vagus nerve dysfunction after the first book came out. So a lot more kind of clinical stories and specific strategies that have tons of research behind them. I really made sure not to leave out any potential good researched way of shifting towards parasympathetic. So I would go to Upgrade Your Vagus Nerve, available wherever you get your books. So that's, and it's, I've been told because it's a bit shorter, it's a little easier read. It's a little bit more simple for anybody to get around. It's not hyper scientific, if anybody was worried about that.
Okay. And you've got a 10-day vagus nerve jumpstart program that's at drnavazhabib.com/jumpstart-vagus. We'll get the link for that in the show notes as well, so people can go there for a 10-day jumpstart. Thanks so much for this conversation. Thanks for the work that you're doing. I think it's one of those topics that's like, there's a few things kind of just still circling around the outside in the functional medicine world that I think, like, no one was talking about trauma 10 years ago, and now it's like one of the biggest buzzwords. The microbiome was kind of on the fringe 10 years ago, and now it's kind of the center focus. But like oral health, I think, is another one, like dental oral health and like things in the mouth, I think are these things that aren't the first line of focus for so many practitioners and for so many clients and patients. And it's like these missing pieces that can really shift the needle for the people who, quote, try everything and like tried this diet, tried this thing and tried this, and it worked for those people, but not for me. And like, I think that the vagus nerve and something like the Truvaga and the practices in your book, like, give them a try. Like, it's going to shift your body's state in a way that can make everything else you're doing work better and be more effective. And so it's a big needle mover that I'm glad you're out there pushing, and then it's kind of getting more into the conversation. So thank you so much.